Welcome to TechNet Radio, your guide to the IT universe.
Welcome back to TechNet Radio. I'm your host, Aurora Queen. Thanks for joining me today. I'm glad you could be here. Moving into November, our theme is going to be Windows Vista. In today's show, Chris Avis talks with Manu Nambudiri about innovations in Vista deployment. Manu is a senior product manager in the Windows Client Marketing Group, focused on the deployment technologies for Windows Vista. After that, we'll have our first Did You Know segment. For today, did you know Microsoft IT manages SAN storage remotely with one person per 750 terabytes? Angus Drummond, a group product manager here at Microsoft, will speak to that. And then I'll wrap it up, as I always do, with my weekly events calendar. Here's Chris Avis and Manu Nambudiri on TechNet Radio.
Okay, good day to everyone, and welcome to TechNet Radio. Today we are speaking with Manu Nambudiri. He is a senior product manager for the Windows client team, and he focuses on Windows deployment technologies. Welcome and thank you for taking time to speak with us today, Manu.
Thank you very much, Chris.
All right, let's just get to the chase on this. We have a website that focuses on deployment technologies for not just Windows, but for Office and just deploying applications out, and that's our Microsoft.com/desktop-deployment site, which gives a lot of good information about what we do around deployment and all the different technologies that we have. So what are the major innovations that you see in deployment around the technologies that we talk about on that site?
Thanks, Chris. I think that's a great question. We have so many good innovations in Windows Vista around deployment. It's hard to know where to start. But the two key things that I think we're bringing to the table this time around is our new imaging format called Windows Imaging. It's the first time Microsoft has consolidated all its technologies around imaging. We've never had a good solution around this. So Windows Imaging, it's a really nice innovation. The capabilities that it offers, the main reason why it is so cool is that it's a file-based imaging technology as opposed to generally what you see in the industry out there, which are sector-based imaging technologies. And the advantage of something like this is that you get a lot more hardware independence. Right? So if you, for example, are an IT pro, you just pop in your Windows Vista DVD in there, and you browse into that DVD, you go into the sources folder, what you will see is a big file called install.wim. Mm-hmm. That is our image we have burnt, you know, we have created in our Windows Vista lab using all the tools and technologies that I'm going to talk about today. What we do inside Microsoft is what you're also going to be getting. Using those tools, we have created this image for you. All you do is just slap it down onto your machine and you're good to go. So imaging is a big deal. That image can work across multiple machines, multiple hardware types. So huge advantage in hardware independence. The second key innovation, I think, is something that very few customers will actually see outside. You know, if you are looking at the engineering side of the world inside Microsoft, you do see it. It's this whole concept of modularization. What we have done is we have completely modularized the operating system, Windows Vista, huge architectural changes underneath in order to build a better and more reliable operating system. What I mean by this is that we have a lot of different components that come together to build the operating system. There are a lot of core components such as the kernel, the shells, a couple of other things like that, and some optional components such as drivers and language packs, etc. The advantage of this whole modularization idea is that Windows Vista will be completely language independent. Pure Windows Vista, if you look at it, you know, not that you would ever install it like this, does not even have English inside it. So combined with...
Wow.
Combined with the hardware independence that Windows Imaging provides and the language independence that the modularization provides, what that enables an IT professional to do is significantly reduce the number of images they have to maintain. I don't know if you know, Chris, but many companies have hundreds of images that they have to maintain, and each time there's a patch, right, they have to update and test each one of those images.
Correct.
It's very time-consuming, very expensive job. And the main reason, actually, we got some statistics. We did some surveys, and we found out that around 55% of IT professionals, they told us that they cannot reduce the number of images they have because they're supporting multiple hardware. You know, they might have this type of a laptop, another type of a tablet PC, this kind of a desktop, etc.
Right.
Hard for them to reduce it. But Windows Vista also provides hardware abstraction layer independence. So all the things that tie an operating system down to a specific piece of hardware, we have kind of removed, which means that you create one image, you can pretty much put that onto multiple types of hardware, ergo lower number of images, simplicity, and customers love this thing.
Okay, so let's drill a little bit into more a little bit more into this imaging technologies. You had mentioned our Windows imaging format, and let's just get a point of clarification, because when I've been doing research and playing with this over time, I know that our files have kind of changed. So is it called ImageX or XImage?
So ImageX is a tool. Now, that's the new name, ImageX, and that's the tool that works on top of these imaging technologies, right?
Okay.
So the imaging technologies have a few things inside it. So the one thing it has is the tools, right, which is ImageX.
Right.
The other things it has is a set of APIs, like Vim, Gapi, that's what we call it, the Windows Imaging APIs, which is what ImageX is written on top of to manipulate the file system. And, of course, obviously there's the Vim file format, which you just mentioned, Chris, the whole file itself. And finally, there are also some on the fourth, there are also some filters, file filters, et cetera, that enable you to manipulate and edit and change the image itself. So, for example, one of the things you can do, which is very, very interesting, you can open up a Windows image file that you just, you know, as I said, you pop in the DVD of Windows Vista, you open that image up, you can, using ImageX, you can mount that as a volume, which means that you can use something as simple as Windows Explorer to browse the internals of that image just as you would any directory, like your My Documents folder. Right. So if you want to add a few drivers or add a few documents into that image, all you do is copy and paste and shut it down and close it, and bingo, those documents are now inside that image. Now, how cool is that? Because
very cool, actually.
it's very cool because you're doing it. You can do these things because you have a file-based imaging format, and that's what Windows Imaging brings. Windows Imaging is actually a collection of things, right? You know, as you mentioned, there's the tools, there are the file filters, there's the technology itself, and the file format itself. So that whole collection of these four things is what we call Windows Imaging.
Okay, so what you're saying then is on, let's say, a retail copy of Vista, there's actually going to be a WIM file that's going to be on the media that ships Vista?
Absolutely.
That we're going to be deploying out our retail versions of Vista with?
Everything will have the same, everything will have the same Windows Vista WIM image inside it. And it's going to be transparent to most users because when they put the DVD in, setup is going to run, it's going to take that WIM image and slap it onto the into the disk drive, and you're done.
Okay. So one other piece of our imaging technologies, we hear a little bit about the Windows pre-installation environment, WinPE. What does WinPE do for us?
Well, WinPE is something, it's kind of, I look at it as being the foundation of pretty much all the stuff we do around deployment, right? In the past, this was DOS. You know, you use DOS-based environments to script installations, etc. Now, DOS is dead, you know. A lot of people might love DOS, but unfortunately for them, DOS is dead. You know, we're not going to be supporting it anymore.
Right. Can't hold on to it forever.
Absolutely. You know, it's a lovable thing. I used it a lot in my life. I'm sorry to see it go, but unfortunately sometimes, you know, you got to let it go.
Yes.
But WinPE is the brand new DOS. You can look at it. It does all the stuff that DOS did and a lot more. What you can do with it is you can format your drives. It's kind of the pre-installation environment. It sets up your machine in preparation for installation of the real operating system. So the sources directory that I talked about before, Chris, you know, when you put in the DVD, right beside it, you will see another little WIM file. There are two WIM files in there. One of them is install.wim. There's another little one called boot.wim, which is pretty much WinPE. Yeah, that is the pre-installation environment. It runs in the RAM of your operating system, formats your hard drive. You know, you can add in new optional components inside WinPE. Like, for example, if you're a Japanese customer and you want to run the pre-installation environment in Japanese, you can do that. So, so what you're doing with WinPE is preparing the hardware for operating system install. But you can do a lot more things beyond that as well. Like, for example, recovery environments.
Right.
Right. Diagnostics. All these things are what WinPE gives you. and it's a lot more secure, supports new formats like TFTP, HTTP, all those things that DOS had a hard time supporting. That's the reason why we're moving to WinPE, is to take advantage of these new protocols at the same time make for a more secure, graphical kind of an install process.
Okay, so for IT pros and system builders, et cetera, if I understand the process correctly, they can actually boot with a bootable WinPE disk and then launch our ImageX environment from there to capture the images that they've put in place for deployment, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's exactly how ImageX is going to be used in a WinPE environment. That's the reason why I talked about WinPE being the foundation for pretty much all the tools. So what you would do in that and in that kind of context is you pop in the WinPE boot environment, you run ImageX from there, and the image that you want to capture, like say, for example, you've already installed Windows Vista onto your desktop, you put in Office, you put in a couple of your applications that you think everybody is going to need, such as maybe antivirus, then what you do is you shut it down, you bring up WinPE from ImageX. You can say, ImageX, now capture that drive for me, like the C drive. Mm-hmm. And it captures that whole thing into an install.wim, or whatever you want to call it, your WIM file.
Mm-hmm.
And that WIM file, again, if you just want to install it onto multiple machines, you can do that.
Now, does ImageX capture a partition, or can it capture an entire drive?
It can only capture a partition in that sense. It is not, you cannot capture a whole drive.
Okay.
You can point it to say, well, depends on how you want to call it, right? If one disk drive has got C, D partitions, etc., you've got to capture C first and then D.
Okay.
You cannot capture the whole disk drive.
Right. So we'd have to, let's say you have a desktop deployment that does have two partitions on a drive, we would be creating separate images for each one of those.
That's right.
Okay.
That is right.
So let's move forward a little bit. We've done this process with booting WinPE. We have captured a desktop image that we're going to use for deployment. How does this deployment, this WIM file, work with current solutions like remote installation services, RIS, or unattended and scripted installations?
It works great. So that's the beauty of how we're using WinPE, ImageX, et cetera, right? WinPE can take advantage of the same unattended formats that were there before. In fact, those are also one of the innovations that we have done. In the past, if you look at XP, et cetera, we had multiple unattended files. I'm sure you remember, Chris,
right.
You have unattended.txt, winbomb.ini, et cetera, three, four things that you had to edit and manipulate in order to have a successful deployment. In Vista timeframe, we have reduced that significantly. We are saying you have one unattended file.
Okay. Right?
And that unattended file is written in XML, which makes it
nice.
Doubly useful in the sense that it's machine-readable. At the same time, it's easier for you to edit and manipulate.
Yeah, and it's XML is becoming very quickly a nice standard format for lots of different applications.
Absolutely.
So people have become quite familiar with it over time.
Absolutely. So that unattended format can be used in during setup, or I talked about the whole component architecture.
Yes.
One of the beautiful things about that component architecture, combined with our file-based imaging format, is that you can run that unattended file on an install.wim that is just sitting on a disk. Right. The whole concept of offline servicing. You don't have to be running an operating system in order to patch it or update it. You can patch and update those things directly on disk using that same unattended format. So that's the beauty of what the component architecture is, the fact that you can do these things offline. Like, you can think of a scenario where you have an image that's been created for the whole corporation, right? And let's say you have an office abroad, and
okay.
You want to ship that image there, right? You ship that image there initially, and a patch comes in. You update the corporate image. Now, do you want to ship that whole image again all the way to, maybe 3,000, 4,000 miles away every single time? No, that doesn't make sense, right? So what you can do with the offline servicing capability is all you have to do maybe is to ship that 250-kilobyte update and patch, and you can offline service the image that is sitting remotely, which is a pretty cool technology.
That is very nice, because you're reducing the amount of data that's having to be sent either over the wire to a remote location, And not to mention the amount of time, and again, manipulating the images.
Absolutely, and the other advantage that, you know, from a reliability perspective is also the fact that you're using exactly the same methodology for updating a running machine as you're updating an image, which brings in consistency and a lot more reliability.
Excellent, excellent. So what other types of tools do we have? I've heard, you know, we're famous for our acronyms. So I've heard of the WSIM, the USMT. One of them that isn't abbreviated is actually it is. It's the ACT, the Application Compatibility Toolkit. How do all of these factor into deployment?
Right, so all these things are different tools. The ACT is the Application Compatibility Toolkit. You know, this is also, again, when we do surveys, you know, we find out that this is a major blocker for a lot of customers. You know, there's a perception that applications are not going to work, and then, of course, there's reality. Some applications obviously are not going to work because of the new security model that Windows Vista has and some of the changes that we have done. So, but the bigger part of the problem is many customers they have no idea what the scope of the problem is, right? They look at this and say, okay, I have 2,000 applications in my environment. Do I have to test and figure out all 2,000 of these things? So the scope of a problem like that scares them.
Mm-hmm.
In what we have done with the Application Compatibility Toolkit, we have done something really neat is, for the first time, Microsoft, you know, we test a lot of applications on every single build, right? Every single build, we test hundreds of thousands of, you know, hundreds of applications, and in some major builds, we test thousands of applications. For the first time, we're actually sharing the test results of what we have done to a community, right? So, and ACT takes advantage of that information. In the past, you know, how would one know if application from this particular vendor works or not? They have to do the testing themselves.
Correct.
Now, because Microsoft is sharing that information, right, they're able to start off at, let's say, an 80% level of comfort rather than starting from zero.
Right.
So we are reducing the scope of the problem. Now, the other thing that that community can do is also get input from an IT professional. Let's say I'm working for a bank. I've tested out a whole bunch of applications. I can provide my input to that community saying that, hey, I've tested out these four applications. They work great. That fifth application does not work, so that somebody else can take advantage of that information. So as we strengthen this community and as there's more information about there, a customer can look at it and say, okay, I have 2,000 applications. The community tells me really good information about 1,500 of them, which means I don't have to worry about it, essentially reducing the size and the scope of the problem.
Right.
This is the biggest benefit that they get out of this, which is a huge deal for many of our customers. So AppCompat, they like that whole concept of us sharing that information.
So that leads to a good question. How does one get involved in that community?
All you do is get the AppCompat toolkit. All you need is a passport account. So if you have a Hotmail or MSN account, you can share information with the community, and you can get information from the community.
Okay, and so finding the Application Compatibility Toolkit is a pretty simple query out at Microsoft.com. And just to reiterate the link that I had mentioned earlier, if you go out to Microsoft.com/desktop-deployment, I know that we have links and resources for all of the things that we've been speaking about today as well. So.
Right, right. So I think the other thing I also want to mention here, and I'll talk about this hopefully a little bit more, is, you know, there are so many tools and technologies, right? And that's why we have a one-stop shop for all the tools and technologies,
right,
plus the guidance on how to get it. Now, the other thing, Chris, that you also asked was about USMT and Windows System Image Manager. These are other tools as well. You know, in the planning phase of deployment, the things, obviously, AppCompat is a big deal. The other thing is, how do you plan your migration, right? How do you figure out what applications, you know, are going to be on the new environment? What data has to move over? What Internet Explorer settings, so to speak, have to move over?
Exactly.
That's what USMT, which is the user state migration toolkit, helps you.
Okay.
There was a previous version called version 2.6 that worked on XP, et cetera. In Windows Vista, it's now up to a version 3.0, significantly more reliable. Again, you know, Chris, as we talked about the trend of moving towards XML, USMT uses XML-based migration scripts to help you with that migration.
Right.
So, and this toolkit is an enterprise-class kind of toolkit. You can write your migration scripts, and the unattended formats that we talked about and the setup formats that I talked about, they all take advantage of this and help you in your migration. So that's what USMT is all about.
What does the USMT is does it actually migrate user settings from, let's say, an existing XP deployment to what you want to do in a Vista deployment?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. You can use the USMT toolkit. And the thing with all these tools, pretty much a lot of these tools are heterogeneous in the sense that you can also migrate to XP, right?
Right, XP to XP.
Absolutely, or Windows 2000 to XP. Right?
Excellent.
So, other tools like WinPE, they work down level. ImageX works down level. Right. AppCompat Toolkit works down level. WDS, which is the replacement for RIS, works down level. So even if you are changing your backend infrastructure and utilizing all these big tools, we understand that customers are not going to, some of them will, but some of them might not. They might not switch 100% to Vista right away.
Right.
So the ability for them to work across heterogeneous platforms, supporting XP and Vista with the same set of tools is very beneficial to them, and they can do that with these tools.
Okay, and just to make sure we define all of our acronyms, WDS is Windows Deployment Services, correct?
Right. Yes, absolutely. It is Windows Deployment Services.
And that's the replacement for RIS, which is Remote Installation Services,
exactly.
Which has been around since the Windows 2000 timeframe.
Exactly. So WDS, Windows Deployment Services, also does a whole bunch of cool stuff. It takes advantage, again, of the imaging story. It uses WinPE extensively. It uses the UNATEN file format. You can use WDS to capture stuff using the ImageX capabilities. So it kind of does a simple consolidation of many of these things. If you want to do a remote deployment, you can use WDS to manage those images and do clean installs for your customers.
Excellent.
And the final thing I think I didn't mention is the Windows System Image Manager tool.
Correct.
Right. So we talked again, Chris, a lot about UNATEN formats, right?
Yes. Yeah, now, those things, from day one have been kind of cumbersome. It's a really tedious manual process to work with those things.
Absolutely, and that's exactly the reason why we created the System Image Manager tool. Now, the tool, what it helps you do is create that unified UNATEN format that enables you to configure your images either offline or online. So if you want to create an UNATEN format, for example, that says, hey, for all my images, make sure that the Internet Explorer homepage is set to www.microsoft.com. Right?
Right.
You can do that because what it takes advantage of is, again, the component architecture that I talked about before. Each component inside the Windows Vista image is seen by the System Image Manager tool, and the UNATEN file formats are explicitly based on each component. So you can say, Internet Explorer component, these are the things that I can change inside you, and the UNATEN file format can make those changes for you during setup.
Right, so it allows for not just putting the images on the machine, but customizing all of the different settings. You had mentioned the home page for Internet Explorer, but we can extend it out even further. We can populate the favorites. We can populate internal intranet sites that we use for SharePoint or other types of information for our organization.
Absolutely. Also what that UNATEN format does is that it goes through the different phases of installation. Like, for example, what happens during the WinPE phase? Do you want to make sure that the hard drive is formatted in such and such a way? You can do that with this UNATEN file from System Image Manager.
Now, does this still provide the flexibility to, we can do a completely zero-touch deployment, or can we specify where we want interaction from an end user to supply information still?
You can do that, yeah. A lot of those things. So the way you would get to that zero-touch or a light-touch kind of an installation is how you package and build and configure all these tools together. These tools are powerful by itself, but the sum is larger than these parts, right? How do you glue all these things together? And
right.
That's where, if you go to the Microsoft.com/desktop-deployment website, you'll see that it's all about business desktop deployment.
Mm-hmm.
That's the glue, right? What we have found out when we talk to our customers and when we talk to analysts is that Microsoft, you're very good at giving us technologies, right? You throw technologies over the wall.
Right.
But it's hard for us or IT pros to use it, right? So that's the main reason why we believe, we've talked to a lot of customers. We found out that there's so many varying results in deployment. Some people have a $100 deployment. Some people have a $1,000 per desktop deployment, right?
Right.
There's so much variety and and discrepancy in how people utilize these tools. So that's the main reason why we are focused so much on best practices and guidance and methodology for Vista. And BDD, as we call it, business desktop deployment, is all about methodology and best practices. What we have done is that rather than giving you all these tools from different websites, et cetera, we're saying BDD is the one-stop shop for everything you need to do and know around desktop deployment. You come to BDD, you get all these tools. You don't have to worry about searching for USMT out there, ACT out there, you know, some of the tools, ImageX out there. You come to BDD, you download the BDD solution, and you get all the tools. And right. The main reason why we want you to do that is that so you can also take advantage of the best practices, documents, and methodology. Like, you know, we talk to some analysts, and they say the pitfalls that happen during migration have very little to do with technology. They have to do with process, methodology, how you build your teams, how you think about, you know, what kind of images you want to create, the organizational structure. That's what we want to provide value for using BDD, is to make sure that you start off on the right foot, the right planning process, because planning is absolutely important when you do deployments. So BDD gives you that those resources in helping you plan and build your images in the best practices. And what we're doing around BDD, this is not just something that is a Microsoft standard. It started off something as something we put together from our consultants, but we have expanded it to some of the leading system integrators and ISVs out there who build products for deployment. We are sitting down together, and we are jointly building these best practices, and I urge you to take advantage of them. BDD is only going to get better. You know, we've earnestly starting working together around these best practices because we have realized that it's methodology and guidance that customers want and how these tools and technologies kind of combine and gel together as part of that best practice methodology.
Excellent. So, and just to give, again, a little bit more clarifying information for our listeners that are out there, the BDD or the Business Desktop Deployment Solution is a solutions accelerator, which we've developed those for a variety of different products over the years that we have. But it's kind of an all-inclusive package that includes some of the tools we've talked about, the application compatibility toolkit, the user state migration tool, Windows PE is in that. There's also some additional resources like the Windows Enterprise Learning Framework, it's a user kit. The WAKE, the Windows Automated Installation Kit, is a part of that. So there's a lot of things inside of this package, along with that prescriptive guidance you had mentioned about, you know, collecting information before you do the deployment instead of just driving at it, and you know, basically enabling a good planning and setting up that good foundation to do the deployment.
Absolutely, absolutely, and I can't emphasize enough on that simple message. You know, BDD is all you need in terms of a deployment, in terms of guidance. Go to the BDD website, get everything that you need for a simple light touch-based deployment. If you're looking for zero touch-based deployments, of course, BDD is the methodology to use, but we have a more comprehensive set of enterprise tools, you know, using SMS and MOM, et cetera, that can get you to that goal. So depending on where you are, the methodology is the same. How we implement it, you know, from a scalability perspective kind of changes.
Right. So in short, we can address the small business, the medium business, and the huge business with the different sets of tools that we have. And all of that can be addressed through that Microsoft.com/desktop deployment site.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So we're coming to the end of our session. And traditionally, I go through, we do our technical side of this discussion. And I try to end with a non-technical question. So I was out doing some research on you, and I found out that you received a Master's of Computer Science at UT Austin, and you know that kind of piqued my interest because I lived in Texas for many, many years. So just out of curiosity, did you ever get a chance to attend the South by Southwest Festival, the big music festival there?
Absolutely. You know, South by Southwest, I went there quite a lot. In fact, you know, this is an interesting nugget that very few people know about me. It's, you know, my love for the blues that got me my first job at Morgan Stanley.
Excellent.
Because the people who came down to interview his VP, he, after the overnight session, he's like, so what are we going to do here at Austin? I said, you should go to Antone's. It's a famous little blues bar there. Guy goes to Antone's, and he was late for interviews in the morning. And when I went in for my interview, he said, look, you know, I had such a great time at Antone's that, you know, I'm just too tired to interview you. Why don't you just come to New York? So essentially, yeah, it's great. Stevie Ray Vaughan and all his music and all that stuff.
Excellent.
Right there, yeah.
All right, and there's also a bridge there, and I forgive me, I've forgotten the river that it crosses, but it's the Congress Avenue Bridge. What river does it cross there? Do you recall?
Oh, boy, you know.
I had to put you on the spot with at least one. So.
That's right. Yeah, I don't recall.
There's a bridge in Austin. It's the Congress River Bridge. You cross it, and it's facing in towards
thousands
the Capitol.
Thousands of bats underneath it.
Yeah, and there, if you go out in the dusk and dawn, you can see the bats. Did you ever get a chance to experience that?
Absolutely, and you know, it's right near that, you see there's a Stevie Ray Vaughan statue as well. You just hang out there, and you can see all the bats flying out at night. It's a wonderful sight.
It's pretty amazing, amazing.
That it is.
Okay, well, I would like to thank Manu Nambudiri. Again, he is a senior product manager with our Windows client team. Obviously, since you've been listening to this, we have been talking about deployment technologies. And I'll give one more plug for the site. It's Microsoft.com/desktop-deployment. It's where you can get kind of the one-stop shopping for all of the tools. Thank you very much, Manu, for spending time with us today.
My pleasure, Chris. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, thank you. Have a great day.
Chris Davis and Manu Nambudiri on TechNet Radio. Next, Did You Know? Here I am with Angus Drummond.
Hi, Angus. Thanks so much for joining me today for our first Did You Know segment. So can you just explain what your role here is at Microsoft?
Sure. Until recently, I was running the corporate data centers. That's about, nowadays, 8,000 servers in the Puget Sound and worldwide. Then I moved to a group called Storage Utility, which is large consolidated SAN storage, which I manage today.
Great. So our question today is, how does Microsoft IT manage SAN storage remotely with one person per 750 terabytes?
Well, to answer that, let me take you back 5 years at Microsoft. At that time, we had only 6,000 servers. We were in 3 data centers in the Puget Sound. And most of the storage was direct attached storage, known as DAS. We had some serious operational problems due to having DAS storage. The first was that the DAS was only 20 to 40% utilized. That means the actual amount of files on those spinning disks was occupying only around 30% of the space. The rest of the space was spinning empty. And with 3 data centers, if you think of the wasted space, we're essentially running 2 of them with no data in them. With DAS storage, sharing is also very difficult, as it's not easy to give the unused storage to another server when it's attached directly to a single server. Also, our engineering standards had to be built with DAS storage to build with a very large number of small drives to enable the spindle count for SQL to give suitable performance. Deployment of new storage took several weeks, and expansion of drive sizes required downtime. It was also a very expensive environment to support, requiring a large amount of headcount. And this was a growing issue as the space requirements were increasing by 50 to 100% per year. So we looked for a solution to this. The solution was to purchase mid-range SANs of around the 30 terabyte size and connect those via director class fiber channel switches to the new servers. As such, the new servers could be allocated the space required and could grow without downtime. We offered this SAN storage to our internal customers on a chargeback basis based on cost recovery of the equipment purchased. For example, we charge back at $9 per gigabyte for raw storage space, and we charge also a $1,500 connectivity fee to the customers to connect into the SAN. This pays for the HBA card in the SAN, and for the fiber channel switch ports. So what was the outcome of this change in storage strategy? The first was we were able to reduce the number of different types of servers coming into our environment very drastically. We did this because we had separated storage from server, and as such, the server standards could be reduced to simply a 2-processor server and a 4-processor server, making standardization at the server level very easy and very supportable. We were also able to increase the utilization from the previous 30% to 61%, meaning that we only had to buy half as much disk to deploy the same amount of storage. We were also able to use large drives. We built the SANs out with 300 gig drives as opposed to the previous 36 gig drives, which per gigabyte are much cheaper hardware to purchase. We were also able to offer a service level agreement to our internal customers so that we could deploy new storage or grow existing storage within one business day, something much faster than previously achievable. And we were able to do this with a limit of size of up to 3 terabytes. We were able to manage the environment with far fewer people because the number of physical devices being managed had moved from the 6,000 direct attached storage, small storage islands essentially, to 40 to 60 large storage devices. And that's how we got to running our environment with one person for 750 terabytes. An added advantage was that we were able to accurately report on the environment via the SAN controllers. Previously, we had been unable to pull any accurate information from the servers due to the fact of having to hit so many devices, some of which might be down for maintenance, some of which we might have permissions issues on, etc. Now we could get accurate reports which we could use for capacity planning on a daily basis. So the final outcome was an increase in customer satisfaction, and the service was highly accepted by our customers. It is really perceived internally within Microsoft to have been a value add to the business.
That's awesome, Angus. Thank you so much. So if you want to get more information on this, visit Microsoft.com/IT Showcase. Thanks so much for joining me today, Angus. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Angus Drummond on TechNet Radio. And now on to my weekly events calendar. At Tech New York is taking place next week, Monday, November 6th through November 8th. If you want more information on that, visit ad-tech.com/ny.asp. And then across the country in San Francisco, on Tuesday, November 7th through November 9th, Web 2.0 is taking place. Now in its third year, Web 2.0 has become the gathering place for business leaders of the new web. You can visit web2con.com for more info on that. And I'll also post both those links up on our website, microsoft.com/tnradio. There's a TechNet webcast I wanted to let you know about. It's titled Deploying and Managing Wireless Networks with Windows Vista. And that's Thursday the 2nd at 9:30 a.m. Pacific Time. Microsoft Windows Vista delivers a more secure and manageable wireless platform. This webcast illustrates the Windows Vista wireless networking experience. There's a link for Windows Vista webcasts, which includes that webcast and a whole bunch more, and it's microsoft.com/technet/Windows Vista/webcasts. And I'll put that link up on our site as well. Remember, we always appreciate feedback, so email me here at tnradio@microsoft.com or give a call 877-814-6506. Thanks for listening today. For TechNet Radio, I'm Aurora Queen.
Have comments or want to request a story idea? Call us at 1-877-814-6506.